from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Now, Ursula, you like to be honest about things, right?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to ask you a simple question. If a guy has the gal pay on the first date at a dinner, is that a red flag? I'm asking you personally. No, not with anybody else. Just asking you.
For me, that is a red flag.
Okay. That's all I got for you.
I know you're trying really hard to be correct with your sweeping statement.
No. I just wanted to ask you. Because that sweeping statement.
So if
had
you have no idea what we're talking about, and you're just tuning in, and you think, "Boy, that's a weird open for a show," you can listen to our podcast and get caught up, because it has to do with our scenarios, which was at 10:47 when we solve other people's problems. Also, if you listen to our podcast, catch up on some segments that you might have missed, and you've got a minute, I would love it if you could write us a review. That would be really awesome. That helps us out quite a bit. And again, you can hear our podcast anywhere that you listen to other podcasts, whether it's Spotify, but you can also listen on mynorthwest.com.
What's a normal show open? Not that, huh?
Hello?
Is it me that you're looking for? Lionel Richie. Agree to disagree, brought to you by Garden Roofing and Gutters.
One of these days, we just got to take off the gloves. Just really go at it.
Okay, start on a little serious note here. The family of Caitlin Falstad, she is the Anacortes teacher believed to be murdered by her husband, is speaking out. And the victim's cousin tells Cairo TV the family is devastated, of course. But one of the surprising things is she doesn't entirely blame the husband, Kevin, putting some of that blame on a broken mental health care system. And we read so many crime stories every single day, and we talk about a number of them every week. And there are a lot of family members who go to the media to share their story, what happened to them, their family members, etc. And I was just looking at this story last night, and I'm thinking, why do they do it? You know, if God forbid you or a family member were a victim of a crime, would you seek out the media or say yes when you get that phone call asking for an interview?
I don't know what I would do, because I've never been in that situation. And I think that we all grieve and we do things differently. So I'll answer with that. The second thing I want to say is I'm understanding why sometimes families do talk to the media and tell their story, because sometimes this is their chance to be vulnerable and share with the world. Maybe they want to help prevent someone else feeling like they're feeling, or losing their loved one, or whatever message that they want to get across. They feel that that's what they want to do. And I don't judge anyone if they do or don't talk to the media.
I will say the more likely scenario is that the media sought the family out.
And right, of course.
As a former reporter, I would remember some of my stories that I hated to go out on is when a family deals with a tragedy and then you are tasked with talking to them about that tragedy. It's a lot easier when they want to talk about it. And the reason they might want to talk about it is because they want to share. They want to talk about the legacy of the person who was lost. Or in a case like this, they want to make a point about the mental health system, because it sounds like the couple may have been estranged and he had sought help a week before. He is accused of committing this, and his father had talked about him having mental health issues, that he was suicidal. So there was a lot of things. So I think that part of it is in the healing of getting that message out. The other part is that they left behind. So now we have a mom who was murdered.
Yeah.
Allegedly gone. By dad, who's also gone. And there are children left behind. Children who are going to be raised by, I believe it's the cousin who spoke. And there is a GoFundMe that is set up. And again, how do you get people to donate to a GoFundMe? You share your story. So I think there's a whole number of reasons. I think the bigger question is, why do we as media go out? And I also understand that. I mean, we have to fill in an amount of time on the air and tell a story. And a lot of times your stories are much more compelling if you hear the human side of it. So we've got that pressure of asking, you know, someone who has dealt with the most devastating thing in their lives asking, you know, how are you doing, which is, you know, how do you expect them to feel at that moment? Mm-hmm. In fact, I will tell you that when I first started as a reporter at Cairo, and it was during the arsons started by
Martin Peng.
No, Paul Keller.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I went to one of the scenes and I talked to someone and I asked if he would be willing to talk. And he looked at me and got right in my face and said, "How do you think I feel?"
Yeah.
And said, "I'm not going to talk. How dare you ask me?" And I thought, I get it. I understand. And I'm sorry that I asked you. I'm doing my job. And I learned in that moment is mm-hmm. how you approach it also.
I get questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you approach him and how did you change your approach?
Well, that it was like in the middle of the night. And I mean, his house was still burning and I'm talking to him and I think I asked him, and I was like 23 years old, and I think I asked, like, how do you feel? And he goes, how do you think I feel? Mm. It's too obvious of a question.
Oh, so then you took that kind of question out in the future?
Well, I tried to be more mindful of, okay, what is that person going through right now? Maybe show some more sympathy before you start having it. Even ask, don't assume that they want to talk at that moment.
But...
And you know what? You can't. I mean, you are still going to get people who will slam the door on your face. I will say, though, from that time on, I got more people who were willing to share. And I think a lot of it is just showing empathy yourself, trying to understand what they're dealing with.
What you're pointing to is actually, just to pull back the curtain, it's something that I'm uncomfortable with in this industry because I've been in the position of having to go out and. Hey, find a victim of this mass shooting that happened and get an interview, right? And I could totally understand wanting to talk to the media if you want to memorialize the person who was lost or if you have a cause you need to fundraise for, right? Or there's a glaring issue in society that needs to change. You're looking for policy differences. But I'm just so uncomfortable with a lot of the interviews that go on with crime victims because it seems like exploiting other people's pain. If there's no purpose aside from like providing an emotional narrative to carry a news story, why do it? Why do it? And it's awkward to ask. And it's like it's sometimes really awkward for me to listen to or watch also. So anyways, let's move on, though. All right, let's move on to a judge that has found this Seattle plastic surgeon, Dr. Sahaj Jahan of Allure Aesthetic, that he broke the law by having patients sign NDAs prior to receiving care. Rampant fake reviews created by employees apparently also collected refunds meant for patients by having staff members create fake email addresses. And gee, we touched on the NDA thing a little bit earlier. NDAs have become sweeping, I know, in the entertainment industry, amongst celebrities. They're often used in companies as well. I'm curious, do you think we should make NDAs illegal? Because it seems like it hides a lot of bad behavior.
Nope.
No.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, there is, I think that when some illegal activities happening, I don't think that those NDAs are really valid. But just for the simple part of it, there's sometimes when you go to folks' houses and get-togethers, that there's things that are in the house. And sometimes Ursula, folks will get in those places and take video or tell stories that happened that could really that are not illegal activity, not illegal activities, but things that are happening and tell those stories.
They could be embarrassing. They could be used to bribe. They could be used, which would be a whole nother different kind of crime.
It's called extortion.
Extortion, exactly.
Yeah, which is a crime.
Yeah,
exactly. So the NDAs, though, I think people are willing, a lot of people are willing to sign them because they're so desperate to have access to, and I'm not talking about you, but you know what I'm saying? That there are people who want to have access to that echelon of celebrity or wealth. Mm-hmm. and are willing to sign away this thing so that they can be rubbing elbows and be shoulder to shoulder with some of these people who are in these places where, I mean, I've never been there. I've never had that opportunity. Mm-hmm. But I think that someone pointed out that most NDAs won't hold up in court. And also,
but most
many
people
of
don't
them,
know that.
And most
and you
of them
don't have an attorney to fight it.
Date. And once that NDA is done,
yeah,
you can start blabbing.
Kind of like the gal that worked at USC who an NDA she on had OJ. To sign on OJ years
yes.
ago. And once OJ died, now she's able to talk about what she saw the day that OJ's and his lawyers came in to make sure that a story didn't get out about OJ during his trial in the mid-90s. So
see, that's the thing, man. Like, 1/3 of the American workforce is covered by NDAs. Few of us are privy to proprietary secrets or developing some new product. In the fact that NDAs are used to threaten generally low-level employees or people with little means, with legal consequences for talking about, discussing illegal things they saw, unethical behavior, and even if you're not perjuring someone or you're not, defaming them, you still can't talk. This is ridiculous. Like, if you have to sign an NDA to work for someone, maybe the incentive for your employer should be instead to pay you well enough that you don't think you have to sell information or dirt on them. I don't know. It just seems like a vicious legal cudgel that we have available to folks of certain means that a lot of us have to deal with.
I just want to give a shout out to the Seattle Seahawks organization, because in 2003 and beyond, I never, years ago, this is before social media, I never had to sign anything. Nothing, right?
That's great. I mean, I look at it as, hey, if you have nothing to hide, you don't have to sign anything.
Well, that's true.
Well, if you have nothing to hide, you're not going to make someone sign something, right?
But I will say this. Even if you have nothing to hide, someone can still make a story.
Sure.
They can still make a story, and it is harder to prove something to be not true, right? So, hey, this happened at their house. Well, that's not true. Well, good luck proving it.
Okay, there's something that I had never heard of until yesterday. Oh. Apparently it's all body deodorant. Someone in the Times was ranting about these revolting all body deodorant commercials. They say, please keep it between you and your doctor, I guess. Do you think we need all body deodorant?
Can I get more context to this?
Yeah, it's maybe I'll ask Ursula, but it's a spray-on product.
Okay.
Let's see. Secret markets theirs in this fashion. It is, quote, proven odor protection for the whole body from your pits to your bits. $12.99.
Well, I mean, okay. When you start, now, we in the Pacific Northwest, we're fine. But y'all, when we start going down to Houston and New Orleans and down in the South with humidity, or you go to the Midwest in Chicago where the humidity is there, as soon as you walk out, you know what I'm saying, stuff starts sweating. Hey, Ursula, I'm
just
off.
Get a bar of soap. You know
Hold
what
on.
This is.
Hold on. Wait. Even after the bar of soap, you still start to, you can get that swamp, the swamp. Right?
Its and bits need extra attention.
Yes!
It's deodorant. It's not antiperspirant, though, man.
See, what all body deodorant is just one more product that the marketing geniuses are using to convince you that you need to buy because you have XYZ odor that is no. What's different today? What's different today is that they can market it as an all-body spray that you need. I mean, we already have body sprays. Why do you need all-body deodorant?
Well, the body sprays don't have the,
bucks instead
bacteria-fighting ingredients cause your stank odors.
I don't disagree with it. And I remember, and let me see, I'm going to ask all my folks out there.
Loom. See, all these people are doing Loom. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. That's big right now all over social media. I see it everywhere. I can't escape those commercials.
My grandmama used to say, hold on, let me go take me a certain type of bath.
And that's the one where they just go in there and go to the sink and they go to do the wash up. Now, I can't say it on the air.
It's called a tart wash.
No, they call it a so-and-so bath. And if you know, I bet you Linda and Lacey's going to text in. Some of y'all know what kind of bath that they said it was to take. Like I said, all it is the sink.
Real
quick splash. And they call it a certain type of bath.
You know what? I actually don't think this product is as crazy as because I will fully admit. Back in the day when I was like after high school, my feet didn't smell very good, right? And you could wash with soap. Still to smell bad 1 hour later. Deodorize the feet. No, it wasn't the shoes. Guaranteed.
Puffers back in the same shoes, they're not going to smell good.
I don't have that problem anymore, but, you know.
Linda and Lacey got it. Told you.
Got an issue.
I told you she'd have it. Oh, Janice, you got it. Y'all know what kind of bath I'm talking about.
In my house, it was called a sponge bath.
404. See, folks texting in. They know. Hey, I'm telling you, my grandma used to say it all the time. Baby, I got to go take me up. Bath. And she was in the church too. I can't believe she was speaking that way.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, good stuff. Let's see here. For 11:30,
we're going to talk about car theft.
Oh.
At a certain place that is real busy right now.
Did y'all check?
So, yeah.
So, what Coop on this?
What happened? Yes. I know Perry Cooper's going to be talking to us.
Okay.
What's going on at SEA?
All right.
When it comes to theft.
All right, we do that next. Gene Ursula.
Gene Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Just a reminder that you are an important part of our show and you can weigh in on any of our segments. Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line is 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. It is a very busy time for travelers at SeaTac Airport, otherwise known as SEA. Thousands of people heading out for spring break, but unfortunately it has also been a very busy time for thieves. And Mickey Gomez brings us this story, which is one of the most read on MyNorthwest.com. Hi, Mickey.
Hi, good morning. Or, yeah, it is morning. I'm sorry.
Yes. I was thinking, what time is it?
It's still morning.
Yeah. So tell us about this.
Yeah. So I got to speak with Perry Cooper the other day, and he told us 173 cars were stolen at the airport, which is up 134% from the year before, only 74 the previous year. Now, I know that that is a huge increase, and people are like, that's a lot. Well, when you put it in perspective, SeaTac sees about 2 million vehicles passing through the airport garage annually. So 174 cars stolen out of 2 million, yeah, that's quite a bit, but it's not as much as, say, DFW, where they saw about 984 cars stolen annually. So we're seeing a rise, but not as bad as other places.
Okay, if your car is one of them, then it's a horrible problem.
Absolutely. So I guess absolutely. And that's another thing that we did talk about. If you are the one who had your car stolen, it's not fun.
So you've seen a big spike, mm-hmm. and how is SeaTac responding?
So SeaTac is saying that they have taken measures to go ahead and ensure that, listen, if somebody decides to go walking through the garage to check and, you know, find out which cars aren't locked, which cars have left their key fobs in the vehicle, they say that they've got cameras all over the place. It does help Port Police, see who took the car, so that way they'll have a better chance at catching the person, the thief.
Well, are they going to do anything different going forward? I mean, they're going to do any measures? Because I do agree. 2 million vehicles or 2 million people coming through annually, to have 100-something stolen, that's really not bad. By the way, whose responsibility is it? So if right now, if I were to park my vehicle at SCA and my car is stolen, does SCA, do they take in and be like, hey, we're going to help you out? Or is that just on me?
I would have to ask Perry Cooper that question.
All right, Coop!
Yeah, I'll tell you. Generally, there are signs that say things like park at your own risk, don't leave valuables inside your car, make sure you, blah, 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 blah. I think that is how most parking lots get away with any kind of liability if something happens. I mean, you're basically parking there. You know that there is a chance that you're going to get ripped off. But there are things that you can do to kind of minimize your risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure your doors are locked, for one thing. I mean, I know that just sounds so simple, but what Perry Cooper told us is that a lot of these cars that are stolen, the doors are unlocked. Don't leave your key fob inside the vehicle. Take your car keys with you if you can. Number three, and this is for parking anywhere in the city, don't leave any valuables in your car, even if it's change, like loose change. Thieves are looking for that. Or even if you're going to pick someone up and you want to meet them at baggage claim, and maybe you ran some errands and you've got bags from Target or Walmart or the grocery store in your vehicle, you know, that could be a target as well for thieves to say, ooh, I wonder what's in that car. They've got bags. Let's take a look.
Real quick.
Have you ever had your car broken into?
Yeah. Yeah. But well, I was about to say something dumb. I was about to say I deserved it. But I said I was going to say something dumb. Nobody deserves to have their vehicle broken into. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons why my vehicle, somebody peeked ahead because there was a bag that was left in the seat. To this day, on my vehicle, I don't show anything. I don't even show the cell phone cord. I don't show anything. I want you to look in that car, and there's nothing that you see to entice you to what. Like, somebody might be like, man, I need a cell phone charger. And you see my cell phone charger, you want to do something to it.
I had my car broken into when it was parked out at Seattle Center, one of those paid parking lots.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And
the one right across from the Space Needle?
Sure.
Right by the football field? Uh-huh. That parking lot is notorious.
Same. Yeah.
So one of the worst is basically, so I went in to watch a show. I actually went in to watch Dave Ross performing. And I come back and I have a broken window. So mm-hmm. you have to deal with all the glass. I had a bag that I had in there, a bag that I got on a trip. The bag happened to have my brand new eyeglasses, prescription eyeglasses.
Oh, no.
That was such you get the worst feeling. You feel like...
violated.
You feel violated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Felt the same way.
Even when you've tucked it and you've tried to hide it, it's like thieves know exactly where to look.
I got a question about parking garages, though, because mm-hmm. this is a secured garage, right?
It is.
So in order to steal someone's car, someone has to go in there, mm-hmm. and then they have to pay money to get the car out, right?
Not necessarily. When I asked Perry about that, he said that a lot of times when someone is stealing a vehicle, what they'll do and how they'll know that a car might be stolen is that when someone in front of them is paying to get out of the gate, they decide to go ahead and tailgate that car
right.
and go through. Sometimes they actually take the gate with them.
See, I don't understand why this is a thing. Because if you have secure parking garages, this goes for SEA or downtown Seattle, and you're charging like $8 to $25 an hour, why not have a security guard there at the entrance? They either give you a ticket or they take down your driver's license number. And when you exit, you either have to give them the ticket or your driver's license number to leave. People would not be able to steal cars. It's not like it's that expensive for one person to check driver's licenses.
Well, they have.
I understand it would slow it down.
They do have security.
Not 24/7, though. Also,
and they do have cameras. And he said that there are a lot of cameras, like when you have to go in to the mm-hmm. parking garage, there's a camera. It's on you. When you're leaving, there is a camera on you. When you're going through the gate to pay, there are cameras. So a lot of times those cameras do help, the police identify or find where your vehicle went or if your car was actually stolen or not. And so it can be helpful.
Was it 2 million people or 2 million vehicles?
2 million. He said 2 million vehicles.
Okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm. By the way, he said to make sure it's stolen. How many people believe that their car is stolen at SEA just because they forgot where they parked because it was a week ago?
That's another thing.
I bet that's a lot.
I've had my car broken into just like you.
Yo, Ursula,
I've not only had my car broken into, but I've also lost my car in a parking lot. And from here on, after that happened, oh my gosh, our oldest son, this was in LA, you know, and every parking lot looks the same. And our oldest son, Stephen, was like, Mom, I cannot believe that was the last time that happened. Now I take a picture every time.
I told you I left that
years ago when my kids were little, I left that UW game early, and my car is in a, and I could not find the vehicle.
You're pressing the button.
And my batteries were weak, so I had to be really close on it. I could not find my vehicle for nothing.
I'm embarrassed. I lost my car in a QFC parking lot, and I went back in, and I said, I think my car's been stolen. And then my daughter comes running in, "No, Mom, remember, we parked it in the back." And I'm like, oh. How embarrassing. Yeah.
I think we've all been there.
Mickey, before you go.
Yeah.
Who should pay on the first date?
Wait. Sometimes that question will come out. You ever ask a question and you want to get it back?
Yes.
Let me get that back.
Yeah, let's try it again.
I think the person who makes the most money should pay on the first date.
Oh,
how do you determine that?
Well, you know, when you're going out with someone, I'm going out with an engineer tonight, or, I'm going out with a teacher tonight.
You believe that most people, before they go on a first date, they know whether or not the person makes more or less money than them?
Maybe.
See, I think you're having to make some assumptions on that one.
I know one thing.
Or if not that, if that's too complicated,
yeah.
I think the person who asked should be the one who pays.
There you go.
Well, Mickey, I just want to tell you, mm-hmm. of all the questions I've ever asked you on this show, that was one. As soon as it came out, I wanted to grab it. Wait, come here. Thanks, Mickey.
You're welcome.
Text messages, feedback, and then we'll have Ursula's words to live by. See you, Ursula. Ursula, it's already towards the end of the show. What do you got for us on the text messages?
On the protest near SeaTac Airport yesterday, Destiny in Seattle says, "I flew back from Bend, Oregon yesterday, and I landed into that mess of a protest. My husband wasn't able to get to me, so I took the train while he sat for hours near where everything was going on. This did not make me sympathize with the situation. It makes me greatly dislike them and further divides us. It's the last thing we need."
Kevin in Seattle says, "My friends, family, and I are having conversations about this daily. We can't ignore potential war crimes being conducted with weapons we supply."
JW in Houston says, "Don't block traffic and inconvenience anyone. Anyone else remember the Edmund Pettus Bridge?"
Teen crimes. What?
Were you looking at me?
Oh! No, I thought you had a point.
No.
Oh, I thought you had a point you were going to make. My bad. Teen crimes. 206 says, "I don't disagree with you, G, about the sports, but the further we get from passing along some basic values, thou shalt not kill, we are on a path of no return in our time. We can talk about the consequences, gun control, etc., but more importantly is the opportunity of teaching our young people values when they are most likely to absorb them."
360 says, "I blame the economy. Parents working multiple jobs just trying to make ends meet. I'm a single mom and I have a 15-year-old son. The main reason I do not want to get a second job is because I don't want my son running the streets due to lack of supervision. I really could use another income. Instead, I just play Russian roulette with my bills, trying to throw money at my bills here and there, just trying to keep my basic utilities. I should also note that I make journeyman pay at a union job."
By the way, I want to be crystal clear. I would not be where I am today without having structure after school my entire life. AI girlfriends. 206 says, "My name is Harold. Hi, G. I'm 64 years old and have dated women in their 20s. At this point, though, with the advancement of AI, I would definitely look into that option as an alternative." Okay, Harold.
He actually sent me a picture of his driver's license. His name is Harold.
Brent in Belfair wants to know if he can use the carpool lane if he has his AI girlfriend with him.
Stephanie from Olympia says, "G is assuming someone in their 60s, one, knows how to use AI to have a relationship.
Two, someone of this generation wants to have a fake relationship. Why does it have to be an elderly person? I think there are a lot of lonely young people too. If that is anyone's goal, to have a relationship that is superficial, there are plenty of regular human beings out there that can accomplish that.
Ooh. Scenarios. The hot father I'm dating keeps forgetting his wallet. Is this a red flag? David in the 253 says, gentlemen pay on the first date. Feminist men offer to go Dutch. Cheap men forget their wallet. If a man doesn't offer to at least go half on that first date, then that is a big red flag.
Come on, Dave. I love you, brother. 206 says, this situation of the woman asking the man out and him forgetting his wallet is exactly like a friend I've had since high school. When we were in our 20s, he used to do the same thing, and we fell for it because we enjoyed his company. But he's doing it on purpose because he knows that he can get away with it.
And then on the topic of if a man allows a woman to pay on the first date, he's not the one for you, which was G's sweeping statement. Gina says, why shouldn't a woman pay for a first date, especially if she invited him? Hey, who paid on your first date?
We got to get to words to live by.
No.
Wait.
Because I want to prove that your sweeping statement is false.
Okay.
Who paid on your first date?
We met for coffee.
Uh-huh.
At Anthem Coffee in Puyallup. She was in line first.
And she paid.
And she paid for her coffee. And I paid for mine.
Uh-huh. You didn't pay for hers. So in that case, you should have been a red flag.
All right, Ursula, Words to Live By brought to you by Wilcox Farms.
And this is a quote that I think is really good.
Mm.
We should build people up instead of tearing them down, appreciate them instead of taking them for granted, and be kind instead of being insensitive. Let's focus on compassion and love, and let's make the world a better place together.
That's what you get from 9 to 12.
We try.
Nick, what you got?
Well, you want to find a partner who will spend some time with you, from a cozy night inside to going out on nice days too? Well, for most, they look for others with some common traits and styles, holding hope for love on apps or calling clubs to stay a while. Though another choice is out there that for some isn't bad style, picking out an AI robot without showing any smile. And if you're on the train of making bots to grow your feelings, I won't shame you like the old guys finding girls with younger ceilings. I'll tell you this. If she's young enough to be your daughter, come on, man.
Judging.
What is it about this jingle right here?
Get your head bobbing.
I like that. Wait.
The mango.
Wait, real quick. What movie? What's the name of the movie?
Roxbury.
Yes.
Night of the Roxbury.
Yes. I can still see them in the nightclub right now doing this. Ursula, what you got going on the rest of the day, my friend?
I'm going to the Tulip Festival with my friend Lori. Yes.
Okay.
Someone who taught me what I know. Well, at least in the sweat box. She was the first person who trained me here at Kyra Radio. Someone who dates back 36 years at Kyra
Radio. Wow.
Yeah. We're going to the Tulip Festival.
Go to together. Tulip. All right. I'm going to open up the show asking how the Tulip Festival was tomorrow.
Yes.
All right. The Jack and Spike Show, they're coming up next. Chef, thank you for what you've done. Thank you. Nick, always appreciate you. And all of you, we'll be back here again tomorrow. Ursula needs to get her sleep after the Tulip Festival. Ursula, get your sleep now.
I did well last night, so I'll try again tonight.
All right. We appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. And as always, be kind.
Hope you have as much fun as we have. So long, everybody.